Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam. Dear listeners, Radio Sai continues its weekly presentation of the talking book version of Mr. Howard Moffat's highly acclaimed book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. The author was among the very early Westerners who came to Satya Sai Baba as a skeptic in 1964, and drawn by his enigma, he stayed for considerable periods of time near him in the next 6 years. During this period, he conducted extensive research and probing investigations into the Sai phenomena. He published his findings as the book that has become a classic of Sai literature, often considered the primer which introduced Sri Satya Sai Baba to millions round the world. This book was first published in 1971. Since then, it has been instrumental in drawing millions of seekers to the loving path of Satya Sai. These readings, dear listeners, are being aired every week, and if you wish to revisit a chapter at any time, you can do so at our website radiosai.org. So dear listeners, welcome now to Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat.
Sai Ram, and welcome to this talking book session of excerpts from Mr. Howard Moffat's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. Into my heart's night, along a narrow way, I groped, and lo, the light, an infinite land of day. With those words from the Sufi mystic Jalaluddin Rumi, Mr. Howard Moffat begins chapter 15, entitled, The Same But Different. The author reckons that there may still be millions of people who may never have the good fortune to sit physically at Sai Baba's feet, and therefore, for the sake of those who can believe even though they have not seen, and whose faith and understanding may benefit thereby, he brings further witnesses to the stand. Among those whose stories are given in this session are leading men of science, business, and statecraft.
One afternoon, my wife and I were sitting in a room in Madras, talking to a woman who had come down from the north of India and who was on her way to Prashanti Nilayam to attend the festival of Shivratri. She has known Sai Baba since the late 1940s and is one of his truest, purest, and most sincere bhaktas or devotees. She has not given me permission to use her name, so I will call her Mrs. B. Among others in the room that day was Dr. C.T.K. Chari, who is professor of philosophy at Madras Christian College, a member of the London Society for Psychical Research, and a well-known name in parapsychology circles throughout the world. Mrs. B. was persuaded to tell us a number of her miraculous experiences with Sai Baba, and I relate two or three of them here. She said that in 1952 her son Jawahar, who was then about 5 years old, contracted some disease, with a high fever and delirium. Her husband is a medical man but was absent at the time, and she called in another doctor. At first he thought it was malaria and was treating the child for that. But on the sixth day of high fever, the doctor decided that he had been wrong in his diagnosis. He now thought it was typhoid. The next day, he would do a blood test to make sure. Mrs. B. had then been a follower of Sai Baba for several years. She had seen him perform miracles, but although she often prayed to him as her Sadguru, she was still not sure of the extent of his powers, and was inclined to test him. Now, very worried about her son's health, she began to pray earnestly to Baba, asking his help. After a while, noting that Jawahar looked somewhat better, she took his temperature and found that it had dropped several degrees. Moreover, he was no longer delirious. Was her prayer being answered, or was this just happening naturally? She longed to know, but could she? Then feeling sure that Baba would help her in her doubts and questions, she thought of a way to test the matter. Mentally, she spoke to Baba. If his temperature is exactly 98.4 degrees tomorrow morning, I will believe that it is your work. Next morning, she took the temperature and found it exactly 98.4 degrees. When the doctor came later in the morning, he declared that the boy was quite all right and that there was no need to do the blood test he had planned. Mrs. B learned sometime later on that night, while she was praying fervently to him, Sai Baba was staying at the Venkatagiri Palace. While sitting in a room there with a number of devotees, he suddenly went into a trance. After a while, he returned to his body and told those present, among them the Kumar Raja of Venkatagiri, that a devotee, naming Mrs. B, had been in trouble, her son being sick, and that he had been to help her. "Now Jawahar is all right again," Baba remarked. The Kumar Raja was curious to see this boy whom Baba had flown off to help, and some weeks later, when Mrs. B, the boy Jawahar, and the prince were all visiting Puttaparthi at the same time, Baba was able to satisfy the latter's curiosity. A couple of years later, the same boy was the victim of an accident, was badly cut about, and contracted septic fever at an awkward period when Mrs. B's husband was again absent. It was difficult for her to obtain the medicaments urgently needed. Her prayers to Sai Baba seemed this time to work a miraculous charm over circumstances, enabling her to obtain what was required, and the boy soon recovered. Again she thought it might all be coincidence until she heard from her sister Lily in the south. Mrs. B, who was still living hundreds of miles away to the north, had not written to Lily or to anyone else about the boy's accident. Yet, not long after it happened, when Lily was in Puttaparthi, she heard the story from the lips of Sai Baba himself. He told her all the details of the accident, saying that he had been there. His words to her suggested that it was Mrs. B's sincerity and earnest prayers that forged the link and brought the timely help. So although Mrs. B's mind used to doubt and question things, at deeper levels, her faith and devotion were very strong indeed. When Mrs. B had finished telling her stories, Dr. Chari remarked that he had heard her relate these supernormal events not long after they occurred and several times later to various people. He has known her for many years. Her descriptions, he said, had not varied in detail since the first telling. No additions, no embroidery, which he, speaking as an experienced investigator of psychic phenomena, declared to be remarkable. She's a first-class witness, he assured me.
Let us now hear the experiences of a couple, steeped in the systematic inquiry of science. After hearing repeatedly of things that appear to spurn the laws of physics and chemistry, the cautious scientists visited Sai Baba.
Dr. D.K. Banerjee is a doctor of science and professor of organic chemistry at the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore. His wife is the daughter of a professor of physics. Both are Bengalis and both were brought up without any formal religion. My wife and I called to see them one afternoon at their home in the pleasant grounds of the institute and found them quite willing to talk about miraculous experiences with Sai Baba. In fact, we talked of little else for some 4 hours. While tea came and went, the sun sank in the west and darkness fell over the lawns and gardens. Dr. Banerjee told me that he had been brought up on Vedanta philosophy. This does not make a religion of science, but it does take a scientific attitude towards religion. It certainly does not predispose the mind towards such things as miracles or the idea of divine incarnation. However, the doctor admits that he did have one spiritual hero, that was his uncle Soham Swami, who became famous as a holy man of mighty physical strength and used to wrestle with wild tigers. Later, as a young man, Banerjee read some of his uncle's spiritual books. Nevertheless, he was still very much of a Vedantist and a cautious scientist when he first heard of Sai Baba. In November 1961, mainly out of curiosity, he paid a visit to Puttaparthi. After all, when a scientist hears repeatedly of things that appear to spurn the laws of physics and chemistry, he should make it his business to find out about them for himself. With Dr. Banerjee on that first occasion went Professor Iyer of the same department at the Institute and an officer of the Indian Air Force, who incidentally was a champion parachute jumper. The inexplicable experiences which the doctor had then and in many subsequent contacts with Baba cover a number of different types of miraculous phenomena, such as visions, healing, the production of articles from an invisible dimension, and the conversion of one object into another before the eyes of the beholder. In relating some of his many experiences here, I shall sort them out into groups, although they were to some extent intermixed. The first of Dr. Banerjee's strange visions was to do with Lord Krishna. Although millions of Indians worship Krishna as a divine incarnation, Banerjee had always thought of him as a voluptuary, a playboy. In fact, it was his custom to nickname any loose-living libertine Krishna of the Kali Yuga. While sitting in the room with Baba on his first visit to the ashram, Banerjee saw Baba's face becoming transfigured into the face of Lord Krishna. This happened 3 times, momentarily each time. He was puzzled, but there was more to come. Though the nephew of Soham Swami does not wrestle with tigers, he believes in keeping physically fit. Every morning, he makes use of the parklands around his house for exercising. At about 5 on the morning after his return from Puttaparthi, while he was limbering up on the lawn, a vision of Krishna suddenly appeared before him. Then the little dark blue figure seemed to come towards Banerjee and merge right into him. For some days, the doctor felt that he was possessed by the one he had always regarded as the prototype of Rakes. But it did not make him feel like a Mr. Hyde. In fact, the effect was quite the opposite. He seemed to gain complete and absolute control of his senses and desires. It was the most wonderful inner experience he had ever known. "It made me feel like a king," he said. In this elevated state, he made another journey to the ashram to tell Baba and try to find out what was happening. Baba just smiled and said nothing. Then he placed one hand on Banerjee's head and the other on the small of his back, holding them there for a while. After that, the obsession vanished and the professor came back to normal. But the experience made Banerjee realize how mistaken he had been about the character and significance of Lord Krishna, the divine cowboy, the great king and statesman, the timeless charioteer who spoke the golden words of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna and to all mankind. Baba had taught his new devotee an important lesson in the understanding of God. The second vision, also a transfiguration, is mixed with a materialization phenomenon. It took place at Brindavanam, Whitefield, where Dr. Banerjee and family had gone to see Baba. Suddenly, as the doctor sat in the room looking at the unique Sai head, it changed into the head of Shiva with the waters of the Ganges falling onto Shiva's matted hair. Again, it was but a momentary vision. After some time, Baba produced the locket and, holding it in his palm, showed it to Banerjee's son, asking, "What is that?" "It looks like Shiva," the boy replied. Baba said nothing, but after a moment held it up again and asked the same question. This time, the boy replied, "It looks like Shirdi Baba." The father felt annoyed that his son apparently could not distinguish between the forms of Shiva and Shirdi Baba. Satyasai gave the locket to the boy, and when later Dr. Banerjee examined it, he observed that it had a picture of Shirdi Baba on one side, and on the other, the illustration of Shiva with the matted hair onto which the waters of the Ganges were falling, just like the transfiguration he had just witnessed. Materializations began at Banerjee's first visit. Apart from the vibhuti produced for all of the party, Baba took from the air for Dr. Banerjee a gold medal. The professor showed this to my wife and me when we visited him. On one side is Shirdi Baba with Sri Sai Baba written in Sanskrit, while on the other is an open hand showing the palm and Om in Sanskrit blended with the inscription Abhayam in Telugu and some Tamil script meaning, "When I am there, what is the fear?" However, for skeptics on the watch for sleight of hand tricks, perhaps the most evidential phenomenon is one seen by Dr. Banerjee soon after he met Sai Baba. At this stage, he was himself still a bit suspicious, not being quite sure whether the productions were extremely clever stage magic or genuine miracles. On this occasion, besides Banerjee, there were two women and three children present. Baba stirred the air in the usual way, turned his hand up and opened it to show ash covering his palm like thin layer of powder. Now, before their watching eyes, keeping his palm steadily upturned, he stroked a finger across the powdering of ash. As he did so, there appeared on his palm five large circular sweets, one for each person present. The professor said that these confections were made mainly from cheese and belonged to a type of sweet not well known in India, being found only in certain parts of Bengal, the Banerjee's own state. Mrs. Banerjee, her husband says, is the handyman around the house. Her practical capabilities range from driving in a nail to repairing an internal combustion engine. She was brought up without any formal religion and had never opened a book on spiritual subjects when she met Sai Baba. At her first interview, Baba blessed her by placing his hand above her head. Afterwards, her husband saw a streak of vibhuti along the line parting her hair. Strangely, within a few days, he saw his wife reading books containing Baba's discourses and then later other spiritual literature as well. Sometime afterwards, Baba remarked on this new interest in reading and again blessed her. In doing so, he placed his hand again above her head, but a bit higher this time, and those watching saw vibhuti shower from his palm to cover the whole crown. Her interest in spiritual writings strengthened, deepened, and like her husband, she has become a close devotee of Sai Baba. Dr. Banerjee told me about three miracle cures of which he had had personal acquaintance. The first, which concerned him, was a minor one but still amazing. In travelling by train to Penukonda, en route to Prashanthi Nilayam, he had jammed his little finger in the carriage window. It was black and swollen and very painful. After arriving at the ashram, he was sitting with a crowd in front of the prayer hall, waiting for a sight of Baba. Presently, the heart-stirring figure appeared, walking in his accustomed way along the narrow aisle between the sitting people. Banerjee was in a front row, and when Baba reached this spot, he stopped. But instead of looking at Banerjee, he turned his back and, leaning over, spoke to someone in the opposite row. As he bent forward, the back edge of his robe stroked and covered the doctor's hands, resting in front of him as he sat cross-legged on the ground. Then after a moment, Baba moved on without saying a word to Banerjee. Shortly afterwards, the doctor noticed that the throbbing pain in his finger had practically subsided. Looking at it, he saw with amazement that all the blackness and swelling had completely vanished. The damaged finger was in fact now quite normal, healed by the touch of the master's robe. Another cure concerns the champion parachute jumper who accompanied Dr. Banerjee on his first visit to Prashanthi Nilayam in 1961. This Air Force officer was suffering from a long-standing, incurable disease and for this reason, although married, was not able to have children. Baba produced some vibhuti and gave it to the officer to take internally, saying that he would be cured and would have a healthy son. Whether it was through the vibhuti or the presence and will of the great healer or both combined, the impossible did happen. The incurable disease was cured, and as Baba promised, the champion parachutist later had a son of sound health. The third cure is equally unscientific, yet the worthy scientist of Bangalore tells about it without turning a hair in fact, with obvious delight. The son of a friend, a wealthy manufacturer of chemicals, was suffering from asthma. At least, it seemed like asthma to the family doctor. But when Dr. Banerjee took the boy to Prashanthi Nilayam into the presence of Sai Baba, the latter remarked that it was not asthma at all, but a fault in bone structure that caused difficulty in respiration. Then Baba waved the magic hand again and brought from the Sai stores, as he sometimes calls his mysterious source of supply, a gold locket carrying the picture of Shirdi Sai. Baba said that the boy must wear this as a talisman around his neck and that there would be no more respiration trouble. From that day, Banerjee said the boy had no more signs of the asthma. After a time, the locket began coming off its chain, and when Baba was told of this, he said that it had served its purpose and there was no longer any need to wear it. It could now be kept in a box.
We hope you enjoyed today's presentation. This brings us to the end of the first half of chapter 15. The latter half of this chapter has incredibly interesting accounts of more members of the scientific community trying to fathom the powers of Baba. Please be sure to join us for the rest of this chapter from the reading book session. More when we get together again. Meanwhile, all the best and Jai Sai Ram. You have been listening to a presentation of excerpts from Mr. Howard Murfitt's book, Sai Baba, Man of Miracles. This book has been published in 1971 by Frederick Miller Limited in London.